Where the person I'd like to speak about this month is the Maribe Rav. Most of you probably never heard of him. He was the Rebbe of the Beis Yosef, and was involved in one of the greatest controversies ever, Pulmus HaSmicha. The information, like, always like to start by saying where I got my information from. Came out all of it is in a kuntres called Smichas Kenim. It's a kuntres that was put out by the antagonist, the Maribe Rav, the Marlbach, where he brings the letters that the Maribe Rav had written to him, and what he wrote back to him. And a lot of the information, almost 90% of what we know, comes from there. People have written articles about it, very, very little in terms of Chiddush, very little new information, a little bit controversy how to learn, how to understand the letters exactly, there's a bit of the chronology, and like all history, how to interpret the whole picture. Well, let's start from the beginning of Maribe Rav's life. His name was Rabbi Yaakov Rav. He was born in Spain in 1474. Then he writes himself, so we have that information. At the time of the Spanish expulsion in 1492, he was 18 years old. He ended up in Fez in Morocco and was the Rav of a city, a community of 5,000 families. So he was recognized as a tremendous Talmud Chacham. And to become a Rav of that city and of that age, there were people, many people much older than him, and he was the recognized Talmud Chacham. His own Rebbe was the Ari Avuhav, was quoted many times in the Torah, and one station, the first station of life that we know about, and with tremendous amount of chashivas. We don't know much more the dates and so on, but he ended up in Eretz Yisrael. He ended up, he was in Schleim for a while, went to Cairo, ended up in Tzfas, and spent the rest of his life basically in Tzfas. He was considered, Tzfas at that time, you're talking about the early 1500s, from the Spanish expulsion and onwards, Tzfas was an extraordinary center of Torah. The Beis Yosef, the Arizal, the Ramak, Reb Chaim Vital, the Mabit, the Ramesh Alshich, the Balach Redim, on and on and on. All these people were there a little early, later. This was the heyday. Tzfas was really the capital of the world in Torah at that point. Yerushalayim was a small city, a poor city, and Tzfas definitely had the crown, the Keser Torah. The Maribe Rav gathered a group of people together, and they decided to be Mechadish Smicha. Now, we know this from the letters that followed, from the Marlbach and so on, we'll get to them soon, but he decided to Mechadish Smicha. It's based on a Rambam. The Rambam says, it's in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Dalet, the Yeroyali, that if all Chachmei Yisrael got together, he says it over there, he says in the Pirush Shais also, he's bothered by the following question, the Rambam. The Rambam is bothered by, since Smicha of Sanhedrin can only be Mipi, somebody who's a Samuch, then how are we ever going to have a Sanhedrin again? Smicha, it stopped, and to start it again, you need Musmachim. So how's it going to happen? He brings Psukim, a Pasuk in the Pirush Shnayis, he speaks about that curve to the Zman of Mashiach, there'll be Chiri Sanhedrin again. So how is that possible? So the Rambam says in Pirush Shnayis, and he says in Halacha, v'yoroyali, that if all Chachmei Yisrael got together and they decided to give smicha, their smicha would be a smicha. And then there's another line over there in Halacha about, you know, if we need one musmach or three musmachin, v'adover tzorech hechreya. And I need to, I'm not sure 100%. But, and the Rambam writes, so why were they so much stire that they couldn't be mechadish smicha? The Gemara says they went to extraordinary length to try and make musmach. Why don't you just renew smicha? So the Rambam says, because there was times of Muhammad, the Chachmi Yisrael was spread out, and b'mel they couldn't do it. So the Rambam says that if all Chachmi Yisrael got together, they could start the smicha process. So the Maribe Rav gathered around his Talmidim, and they decided that they're going to start the smicha again. They felt that this was the center of Torah, and there was no place in the world that such a large concentration on Chum existed. They are as good as Kol Chachm Yisrael, and they gave smicha to Maribe Rav. The Maribe Rav then sent a letter to Yerushalayim to two people. He sent a letter to a Talmud of his, Reb Moshe de Castro, telling him about what he had done, expecting him and asking him to help him fight any resistance. And they sent a letter to the person who was the chief Rav of Yerushalayim, named the Marlbach. And the Marlbach was Reb Levi ibn Chaviv. He was a son. His father wrote in Yaakov, and he was his son. He had also been born in Spain, exiled, I think through Portugal, if I'm not mistaken, ended up in Yerushalayim, and he was recognized as the God of Yerushalayim. The relationship between the Marlbach and the Maribe Rav had been difficult. They had many, many disagreements in Halacha, tshuvas back and forth, very strong, sharp back and forth, but he sent him a smicha as well, appointing him as as the musmach of the best. What was the purpose? What was the purported reason? Why did he want to do smicha? So this is printed in the Smicha Skenim. Smicha Skenim includes letters back and forth between the Maribe Rav's first letter, the reply by Moshe Castro, and the replies are Al-Bach, back and forth, two or three times. And he writes like this: many Jews had been in Spain, and they had converted to Christianity under duress. Many people couldn't hold out, and they converted. They now had left Spain. They want to do tshuva, and they're stuck because how do you do tshuva? So they said the following. So they came up with the following mahalach. The Mishnah says that chayve krisis shenilku are potter from krisis. So anybody who is chayv krisis, but he gets malchus, he's potter. So we're going to create a bezdin. We're going to be able to give these people malchus, and they will now feel much better. They'll feel that they want to scamper on all their avers. That's the reason for it. He expected Reb Moshe Castro to be very supportive. It was his Talmud. And the Marlbach, he was waiting to see what the response would be. Reb Moshe Castro also criticized the reasoning, and he came up with the following counterpoint. He said, if you're going to have a Bezdin, you may need to start doing Kiddush HaChodesh with Riyah, and then we're going to start running some real problems. You won't do it, Some people have this yontiv, some have that yontiv. It's you don't know what you're getting into, and that's a reason to stop. Another point of contention back and forth, and again, this goes through all the letters, is the first line of reasoning. The first line of reasoning was that all these chayvikrisis, they would get malchus, they would become potter. Now, first of all, it's not clear what chayvikrisis, what are you talking about? What are you talking about exactly? Being moided of a zara bepeh has a din of chayvikrisis. It's hard to know what exactly, it's not clear. But they had a different taina. They said, you can't come to Bez and ask for malchus. I mean, you need Edim Nasra, and a person cannot, on his own, Haidos Baldin, Enos Asurasha, and you can't, you know, Haidos Baldin does not work for Malchus. Mariberav had an interesting approach. He said, if you're going to do it for Tshuva, there's no Enos Asurasha. He's coming in order to get Tshuva, and so on, back and forth, Ner Halachi issue. The back and forth letters cover about 100 pages of not particularly big writing, and it's printed in back of the Shalza Tshuva's Marlbach. The letters start cordial, and it sounded as if in the beginning they didn't think it would go public. At some point, those letters became sharp to a degree that you've never seen. Extraordinarily harsh language back and forth about each other, very personal. Maribe Rav writes him a line as follows, that first of all, each one writes why they think that they are royu, the Maribe Rav writes that he was a Rav at the age of 18 in Paz, and people that are bigger and it took him, and so on and so forth. The Marlbach writes about him being the Chochem Mishlaim, and so on. Very, very strong emphasis, you know, credential presenting. But the Maribe Rav writes, Baruch Hashem, I never wavered my faith and was strong and didn't do anything wrong. There was an association there. The Marlbach had pro forma converted. And the Marlbach was very hurt by that, and he wrote back very sharply. He says, I was not chayev, I was under 20 when it happened, and this and that, and I've been all my life in Torah. So very, very sharp. And the language goes back and forth, extremely sharp, extremely harsh. I mean, to a degree that's almost parts of it are just not repeatable. The question is, why? Let's get first a sense what happened. These two or three months after he was Nismach, he had to run away to Damascus, and he writes that it's not clear what happened, but he writes that what happened to me was like something that happened to Yehuda ben Bava, which means that when he tried to give smicha, they kemat killed him. The question is, was it because he gave smicha, or was it some other inyan, some monetary issue, that he just felt it was because he gave smicha? He writes that two or three people masad on him, and he doesn't forgive them, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should pay them back in kind. Not clear which story. It's also not clear if he ran away once, or he ran away he ran away once and then came back and ran away a second time. He saw that if he's not going to do something, the whole smicha project will come to an end. And he gave smicha to four more people. One of whom was the Beis Yosef. A second one was the Mabit, those two we know. Two others less famous. Somewhere along the line, Reb Chaim Vital also got smicha. Reb Moshe Alsher got smicha, and Chaim Vital. It's not clear. Smicha lasted just another generation or another generation and a half or so. But certainly the Beis Yosef was Nismach. And the Mabit. The Mabit wrote very strong letters holding up the kavod of the Maribei Rav. And it's not clear if all Chochmei Tzfas remains so steadfast or not. The Maribei Rav had to run away at the end totally. He died 3 years later. He died in 1541, I think it is. Where the smicha was as chadash 1538, in 1541 he was nifta. The Beis Yosef, the Magid, tells the Beis Yosef in his safe of the Magid, he tells him that you have a tremendous schar waiting for you, that you are mosa nefesh to renew the smicha again. So obviously that it made a roshim somewhere, and the Beis Yosef was very involved in it. He wasn't just a passive recipient, he was very involved with it. So we have here an incredible tug of war between two tzadim, two gedolei olam. The Beis Yosef, whose Shulchan Aruch we live off, got smicha. He never writes about it in Shulchan Aruch, not in Beis Yosef, doesn't write about it. And yet, it's a very, very, the whole thing's mysterious. They try to keep it quiet for a while. They were scared of opposition. At the end of the day, once the Marlbach came out against it, so it automatically was considered that you don't have all Chachmei Yisrael, even though my Maribei Rav tried to sign it at Rubon Kekulam, but it didn't. So there was a few people that they got the smicha, but it never really took off. The question is, what really was behind it? I mean, giving malchus to the danusim, okay, it's very important, but it's a long stretch in halacha. So we have a little bit of a clue from the Malbach's response. The Malbach writes, again, this is part of the kuntres, there are two things that there are two things that I saved Jewry in Eretz Yisrael from. One is the Psurais HaShoitim, Kiyadua, and so on, which sounds very much like just the tone of everything, that there was a Mashiach Sheker floating around, getting people riled up about the Geula, and he put a stop to it. You have to understand, this was a tkufa after Spanish expulsion. Spanish expulsion was still fresh in everybody's mind. It had happened in 1492, and people were still shell-shocked. It's the major branch of Judaism had just disappeared. Spain, Portugal, where the Iberian Peninsula was probably the main yeshuv of Klal Yisrael, and it's gone. So people were very shell-shocked, and it was ripe for messianism of different types. And someone had obviously appeared claiming to be Mashiach with nevuahs and things, and the Marlbach put a stop to it, however he did it. But that's what he seems to mean, that the psuris hashaitim. The second thing he said was the smicha that I stopped. I believe, and it seems most people understand it, that the smicha was seen as a way to bring Mashiach. In other words, since the Rambam says that k'samach to the tkufas of Mashiach, there will be a chiddush of smicha, so it was seen as hastening the coming of Mashiach. In other words, the most people, sort of non-from historians, they chalk it up as a fight between, a very personal fight, and you know, kedarkom or betuma, not bekodesh, everything is a personal quarrel between people, and therefore it was a personal quarrel whether tzfas is more chashev, Yerushalayim is more chashev. Yerushalayim was a very was small yeshuv, wasn't doing well, tzfas was doing very well, and that's how they interpret this whole thing. So that's the world they live in, that's how they interpret everything around it. But what does seem to be the bigger picture is because if you look at the halachic issues, they go back and forth, different things. It doesn't seem that that should be the pressing point. It seems that they saw in this a mahalach to bring Mashiach. They saw it as a mahalach that's sort of a segue to Mashiach. The Maralbach, on the other hand, was very, very weary of this whole idea of provoking Mashiachs. He said two things that, you know, I hope remains like and stands instead for me is one is that I was menei apsuras hashaitim. Second one, the smicha also seems to be both of them seem to be sort of Mashiach oriented. That's really what it seems to be. And the Maralbach at the end of the day stopped it. So even though we had a little bit of trickle and some people trace another door, another two doors, but that's it. It's clear that within 50, 60 years, there was gone. Either the Talmidim didn't warn Masmech anybody else and so on. And there were claims that secretly there were Masmech a lot more people. It's very hard to get a handle on these things. But Al Kapanim, the big parasha was over basically with his Petira or with his running away from Tzfas. The Maribi Rav left us in terms of Sfarim. He had written a sefer on Kedushin that we have. Kedushin on Sefer Kedushin, it's printed, we have it. There are tshuvas, but it seems to be a fraction of the tshuvas that he had really written. Somebody had gathered together tshuvas, but it seems to be a small portion of what he'd written. He also started to write a pirush on the Rambam where the Magid Mishnah did not write one. The Kesem Mishnah was a Talmud of his, so there was no Kesem Mishnah when he was around. But the Magid Mishnah had written he had written on the Rambam, the Makoris and so on. There were places he didn't write, so the Maribi Rav wrote. He wrote on Sefer Madan, Sefer Zroim, that's all, and then he was Nifta. And they put it out at some point, but Lamai said that's what he left over. It's an incredible parasha. It's one of those big machloikas, and when people speak about terrible machloikas today, if you look at them, if you go through those consciousness, the language that they used, anything we have pales in comparison to it. They were both very sharp. And even the previous machlokas they had, the lashonos are very sharp. What's interesting, though, is that even after having many sharp machlokas, they always keep coming back to a very cordial relationship, and it almost seems as if the machlokas on the etzem inyan were extremely sharp, but there's always a pius at some place. And it seems as if in other areas it didn't become personal. The Lashon is different places where they treat each other with tremendous respect. The Maralbach had some din Torahs, and he asked to send his case to the Maribi Rav. The Maribi Rav should paskin what he thinks about it. So obviously he held the Maribi Rav in tremendous esteem. But in terms of these of the halachic inyanim, there's a get ma'isa, an aguna ma'isa, a few different things where the machlokas were extremely sharp. In these kontrasim, in this smichas kenim, everything pales in comparison to that in terms of the sharpness of it. It's really, really incredible the language they used. But I think the reason was for this reason. According to the Maribi Rav, this would bring Mashiach. This was an Ashas HaKoisha the Klal Yisrael never had. All Chachmei Yisrael in one place in Eretz Yisrael. So let's move. Let's do something about it. The Maralbach was very weary about this. And anything to do with Mashiach usually ends up to be a disaster. And B'meila, he did everything he could to oppose it. So the sharpness of the shyness and the attacks are probably a result of how strongly each person felt about how vital this is. The Maribi Rav felt the Kiyum HaKlayisrael is tolerant. This, to take HaKlayisrael out of Golos, out of such a terrible Golos, they just finished the Inquisition, destroyed a big part of HaKlayisrael. It's enough, we need Mashiach. And the Maralbach's cook, that type of, we need Mashiach, is asking for a terrible disaster. The thing that we have out of it is that the Sefer that we use as the Psach and Kal Yisrael, the Shulchan Aruch, was written by somebody with Smicha, according to some Shittas, Barak HaPanim, Halei Davahu. Of all the people, he had Smicha. The other person, Reb Chaim Vital, who wrote up the Ksavim, that Rizal had Smicha. So Hashgacha somewhere along the line had two people who are pillars in Klal Yisrael of Torah, the Torah of the Shulchan Aruch and the Torah of Chaim Vital. They both had Smicha. Maybe that was the Hashgacha. I don't know. We don't know. It's Alei Davahu. Marie Berav was Nifta on Chav Tes Nissen. This is outside, it's in a month from now. And like we said, in 1541, an incredible tekufa, and closed with it. It was the last 3 years of his life that this whole thing went on. It's possibly a machlokas like that wouldn't happen for a long time to come. Such a sharp machlokas into two such gedolim, of such stature, is maybe somewhere further along the line, Rabbeinu Snaibishitz and Rabbi Emden. And it's interesting, all the machlokas and the huge machlokas in Klal Yisrael between Gdol Yisrael, where Yaakov Emden and Snaibishitz, the Gra and Baal Tanya, the Baal Shem Tov, they all were around the same Indian. On the one hand, a desire to push through something that could possibly be a profound Shinui in Klal Yisrael, Chassidus and so on, Kabbalah, Chassidus, these things, versus a tremendous fear of Mashiach Sheker. Each one saw this as being the absolute survival of Klal Yisrael, and therefore you were out, you were out to push as hard as you could. Al Kaponim, today we have both Sfarim are by us. We have the Maralbach and the Ribei Rav. This Kuntres, if anybody wants to look at it, it's called Smichas Kenim. It's in the back of Tshuvas Maralbach. It's long, very long, but it's long. Each halachic argument is long. You can skim through it and see what's the point they're talking about. Since the Maralbach put it out, there are tainis, he gets the last word in, there are tainis that the Rebbe Rav had a kuntres to answer it that wasn't printed, they didn't print it, I don't know, all these things are things that, if we don't have it, it's hard to tell, but Al Kaponim, that was the Rebbe Rav and the pulmus of the Smicha.